Welcome to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio. We explore people, stories, and events here in Central Iowa. Thank you for listening. I am your host today, Cynthia McClure. For the rest of our program, we will be going into a little more depth with stories we think that will interest you. We'll bring in Myra McKay, the director of the Boone County Historical Society, to fill us in about some of the possibilities under discussion about the future of the Mamie Dodd Eisenhower Birthplace in Boone.
First, we turn to Dennis Hart with his weekly news roundup.
There was plenty of news in and around Ames this week, so let's get started. In Tuesday's Tribune, word that the Ames School District has taken its next step toward determining the future of Ames High and whether to rebuild it, renovate it, or leave it as is by issuing a request for proposals for construction management services. The school was built in 1960 and has undergone 15 additions and 13 elevation changes. Issues with the current high school building include student circulation, accessibility, and security. Earlier this year, in an unofficial vote, the school board unanimously supported building a new high school. But Ames voters will make the final decision on what to do with the school in a bond referendum next spring. The date for that has not been set, but April 3rd is being looked at as a strong possibility. The board must decide whether building a new swimming pool will be included on the ballot or be separate. The school board is asking qualified consultants to provide proposals for construction management services for a new high school building and for a swimming pool. The construction manager will report directly to school superintendent Tim Taylor and will be responsible for all project-related activities. The district estimates the new school building would have 330,000 square feet plus 40,000 square feet for the pool. The district wants the school finished by May 31, 2022, in order to start classes in August of that year. The total project cost is $100 million for the high school and $18 million for the swimming pool facility. A committee composed of district representatives will review and evaluate the proposals and recommend the firm deemed most qualified. Also in Monday's Trib, a project developer said the old Crawford Elementary School's transformation into a 55 and older living facility could be finished by late next year or early 2019. Luke Jensen of RES Development said light demolition of the old building will start this winter, with construction to begin when the weather clears up in spring. Plans are for the new construction to connect to the updated original building from the south end of the property, which is now mostly an empty parking lot. The conceptual drawing for the project shows 32 apartment units, 22 with two bedrooms and 10 with one bedroom, and about 70 parking spots. An outdoor gathering place with a fire pit would occupy the northwest corner of the property. Jensen said the smaller apartments would have about 700 square feet, while the two-bedroom models could expand to about 1,250 square feet. He said the developers are leaning towards selling the units rather than renting them, and that the units could cost between $200,000 and $300,000. Jensen said there are already people in the neighborhood who might have an interest in moving in once the project is completed. The next step is for the project to go before the Ames Planning and Zoning Commission for rezoning. The empty school building at 415 Stanton sits on low-density residential land, which would need to be changed to high-density residential to hold the apartments. A city planner said Ames is also considering zoning that would require that the Crawford project only be used for 55 and older housing. Crawford Elementary opened in 1930 and served students for more than seven decades. It closed as a school in 2001, but later served as the school district's administrative building before the district headquarters moved to a new building on 24th Street. In April, the school board approved selling the property to developers for $75,000. The South Campus area neighborhood supported the sale and the upcoming construction. Jensen said developers would look to preserve some of the building's historic traits. Earlier, Jensen's group redeveloped the old Roosevelt Elementary School. Also in Tuesday's Tribune, the Ames man who police say robbed the downtown Hy-Vee drugstore at Knife Point this past summer was sentenced to 25 years in prison on Monday. 37-year-old Noah Sanderson had pleaded guilty to second-degree robbery and first-degree theft. Police arrested Sanderson on July 14th after authorities said he entered the drugstore at Main and Clark wearing sunglasses and a bandana over his face. Police said he approached a clerk, told her to open the register, and took an undisclosed amount of cash. Police caught up with him in a field south of the Main Street Depot. Also in Tuesday's Tribune, the Ames man who was arrested last week for allegedly breaking into a South Ames pharmacy twice within the past few months faces additional charges from a break-in in Nevada. 26-year-old Austin Kyle Brinks was charged with, among other things, burglary and criminal mischief in connection with a Nevada pharmacy robbery in September. He already faced charges from two incidents at an Ames pharmacy in August and September. And one more story from Tuesday's Tribune. An Oklahoma City-based donut shop is in talks to open a location inside Orange Leaf Frozen Yogurt on Lincoln Way at the end of the year. John Shelton, who owns Sweet Minnie's Donut Company and Ames' Orange Leaf location, said he intends to co-brand his shops and replace four of the yogurt dispensers with a donut bar. If this happens, it would be the first collaboration between the two companies and perhaps serve as a model for combining other food companies with Orange Leaf locations around the U.S. In Wednesday's Trib, the big story involved Iowa Governor Kim Reynolds and Lieutenant Governor Adam Gregg, who came to Ames Tuesday to announce a new statewide health campaign to combat childhood obesity. It's called 5210, Healthy Choices Count. The program has already been implemented in numerous states. It focuses on the importance of four daily habits: eating five or more offerings of fruits and vegetables, spending a maximum of 2 hours on recreational screen time, engaging in one or more hours of physical activity each day, and consuming zero or reduced sugar beverages. The new campaign is a public-private partnership with the Healthiest State Initiative and the Iowa Department of Public Health. Reynolds said that research has shown that children who have healthy eating habits, who are physically active, and who spend less time in front of a screen do better in school. Their reading scores improve, they're able to maintain better focus in class, and they sleep better. As part of the statewide 5210 campaign, toolkits, social media, advertising, and website content will be used this month and next. The State Department of Public Health is working to implement community-wide strategies. Communities involved will receive $18,000 to improve access to a healthy environment. Childhood obesity affects young people physically, socially, and emotionally. Not only are obese children at a greater risk for asthma, sleep apnea, and type 2 diabetes, they are often bullied and suffer from depression and low self-esteem. Iowa is ranked 30th in the country for obesity rates of children ages 10 to 17. Governor Reynolds also signed a proclamation declaring November as Diabetes and Cardiovascular Disease Awareness Month. Also in Wednesday's Tribune, the Story County Board of Supervisors adopted amendments to a county ordinance for animal control and welfare. The new ordinance defines animal hoarding as cruelty. Cruelty was added to so-called prohibited acts. The ordinance also revises language regarding the appropriate care of animals, including livestock. A new section on animal hoarding was also added to the ordinance. Also at the supervisors' meeting, the Story County Medical Center was seeking $700,000 to finish the expansion of its South Campus facility, which serves as a co-location for primary care, outpatient therapies, and community wellness. Medical Center Chief Executive Officer Nate Thompson said the South Campus expansion has been well received not only from the county but by medical communities around the state. Through a loan from the U.S. Department of Agriculture, Story County Medical was able to borrow $15 million to help complete the project, on the condition that the medical center fund an additional $2 million from hospital operations and the Story Medical Fund. So far, Story Medical has raised $1.3 million, and it's asking the supervisors to consider the remaining cost in the upcoming budget deliberations. The supervisors also approved a request from the sheriff's office to hire two new detention officers as soon as possible. That request was made because two current detention officers are transferring into deputy sheriff's positions next month. Training for jobs at the jail takes 3 months, so officials hope that by the time the current detention officers transfer to patrol, the new hires will have at least half their training done. Also in Wednesday's Tribune, the two candidates running to be the next mayor of Ames met with the newspaper's Reader Advisory Board on Tuesday to answer a variety of questions. One of those questions involved the city's effort to establish a new residential occupancy rule after the state legislature passed a law that will soon nullify the city's existing ordinance. Candidate Victoria Zapinski called the topic complex and said that Iowa State University could be invited to any discussions about how to change the rental occupancy code. Candidate John Hala proposed getting everyone, including property owners and neighborhood association members, into a room to try to find a compromise. He said if he were elected mayor, he would work as hard as he could to make sure the issue will not divide the community more than it's already been divided. Both candidates addressed the issue of a proposed healthy life center, which would include a recreational pool. The Ames School District recently decided to pull out of a potential partnership with the city to build a healthy life center. Hala said it might be worth it to invest in two indoor pools. Zapinski said she's excited for the healthy life center project to move forward. That is the kind of project that brings people to Ames and keeps them here. And both candidates talked about the one thing they'd like Ames to have that it currently does not have. Zapinski said the city could use a convention center. She was part of the committee that tried to bring one to Ames 3 years ago, but voters rejected that plan. Hala said the one thing he'd bring to Ames that the city does not have right now is housing that's affordable for the Ames workforce. The Ames city election takes place next Tuesday. Also in Wednesday's Tribune, an Ames man was arrested after authorities said he punched and strangled a woman at his home. 24-year-old Jorge Alberto Franco has been charged with domestic assault, strangulation with injury, and driving while barred. Nearly a year ago, Franco had pleaded guilty and was sentenced to a halfway house after assaulting his mother, stepfather, and another woman, and also driving two people off the road. From Thursday's Tribune, the Ames City Council has voted unanimously to hire Mark Lambert as the permanent city attorney. Lambert has been serving as the interim city attorney since May after Judy Parks left the job. During the interview process, Lambert was the only candidate invited to give a public presentation in Ames. His yearly salary will be $130,000. The city attorney is one of two city jobs that reports directly to the city council. The other is the city manager. Also in Thursday's Trib, the Ames Planning and Zoning Commission approved proposals for the addition of 2 8-unit apartment buildings near the Iowa State Research Park. The buildings each will feature 4 1-bedroom units and 4 2-bedroom units at 3331 and 3405 Aurora Avenue, southwest of the Research Park. The development plan will now go to the City Council. 2 weeks ago, the Commission approved plans to build 2 similar parks at 3305 and 3315 Aurora Avenue. Also in Thursday's Trib, about 290 schools from around Iowa give their students a chance to voice their opinions on various topics with the third Iowa Youth Straw Poll. About 50,000 students took part in the poll, which had students answer 4 questions. One of the questions, should your city or town allow the sale and use of fireworks? About 76% of students who voted said yes, 13% voted no, and 11% were undecided. Another question was, what's your favorite school subject? About 26% chose math, 19% chose science, 18% picked social studies, 15% chose reading, and the rest voted other. Another question was, what's your favorite state university in Iowa? Nearly half voted for the University of Iowa. About a third voted for Iowa State, and 9% voted for Northern Iowa. The rest voted other. And the final question was, who's your favorite superhero? Lots of superheroes received votes, with the leaders being Batman, Wonder Woman, Flash, Spider-Man, and Captain America. Teachers said all this was a good way for the students to practice democracy. Also on Thursday's Trib, good news for Iowa State, especially the Cyclone Varsity Football Marching Band. During halftime of last week's homecoming weekend football game, in which ISU defeated Texas Christian, the marching band was honored as the top marching band in the nation. Iowa Governor Kim Reynolds also honored the band, signing a proclamation regarding the group's achievement. And if you're wondering what to do with your jack-o'-lantern now that Halloween has come and gone, well, Thursday's Tribune has an answer. The city of Ames is asking us not to toss those pumpkins in the trash, but to take them to the Resource Recovery Center and put them in a drop-off bin there. The Resource Recovery Plant converts Story County garbage into fuel for the Ames Power Plant. From this week's Nevada Journal, a story about a new adaptive art and physical education class at Nevada High School. It's the first year for the class, and the idea is to take students who need special accommodations or who have physical or mental disabilities, all of whom could benefit from a more personal approach to learning, and place them in a class with general education students who are mentors. The idea is that those needing help would get that from the students who are, in turn, gaining experience in being mentors and leaders. The class currently has 13 students. In the PE part of the class, students work on hand-eye coordination and motor skills activities. They have played volleyball with beach balls and balloons and have played badminton and ping pong. In the art class, students have worked on circle paintings. Also in the journal this week, about 2 dozen walkers showed up last Saturday morning to take part in a local walk against cancer. They raised nearly $800. The money will be given to the Israel Family Hospice House, the American Cancer Society, and the Susan Komen and Bliss Cancer Center. From this week's Boone News Republican, a story about the Project Alert class being taught to 6th and 7th graders at Boone Middle School. The teacher is Rusty Johnson, a prevention specialist for YSS in Boone County. The class curriculum involves motivating students not to use drugs, identifying the pressures to use drugs, learning to resist those pressures, and special issues such as inhalant abuse and how to stop smoking. Johnson said he'll be teaching the same class at Madrid and Ogden. He said the class is valuable, has great results, and that it covers such things as the dangers and effects of tobacco, marijuana abuse, various stimulant and depressant abuse, and over-the-counter and prescription medications. Students are taught how to read drug labels and prescriptions and the importance of not using anyone else's prescribed medications. In this week's Story City Herald, a preview of upcoming Christmas celebrations in Story City. Among them, the Yule Fest tree lighting on Friday, November 24th at 5:30 p.m. Then the Story City Fire Department will hold its annual chili dinner from 5 to 7 p.m., and the Story Theater will show the classic Christmas movie, It's a Wonderful Life. The next day, Saturday, November 25th, shoppers will be encouraged to shop locally, and the first 200 people who stop into the Greater Chamber Connection office will receive a tote bag filled with promotional items. Also in this week's Herald, word that the Story City American Legion and Cub Scout Pack 101 held a successful harvest breakfast last Saturday. The Legion provided the location and food. The Scouts helped serve the meals. Donations went towards supporting the Scouts, and everyone's calling it a big success. And in this week's Herald, a reminder that city elections take place next Tuesday. Story City Mayor Mike Jensen is unopposed in his bid for re-election, and several city council seats will also be on the ballot. And that's a summary of a busy news week indeed, in and around Ames. I'll be back again next Friday morning, and we'll do it all over again.
Thank you, Dennis, for your weekly news update. Now, back to Cynthia.
In preparation for the city's election coming up next Tuesday, November 7th, the Ames Third Ward candidate, Rob Bowers and David Martin, came into the station to tell us their approach to their constituents and each other.
When I attended the candidates' forum in the Ames City Council chambers last week, what impressed me most was the tone of the remarks made by Rob Bowers and David Martin, contending for the seat in Ward 3. Here are the remarks that impressed me at the forum. David Martin spoke first, but it was Rob's statement that caught my attention.
My plan is to talk to the Ward 3 residents and work out the issues in context. That's what you do in business. You have to talk to your clients and find out what they need. After all, the Ward 3 counselor is going to represent those residents, and I've spoken with hundreds of them when I've been out campaigning, door knocking. So if you're a Ward 3 voter, when November comes around, it's coming up pretty soon, I'm going to ask you to decide. Who do you think is most accessible and communicative, and who will represent your interests best? I hope you'll think of me. Thank you very much.
I'd like to thank everyone attending here tonight and thank the League for sponsoring this forum. This truly has been an amazing experience running for this office, much more so than I thought it would be. 6 months ago, it was an extremely intimidating experience, and I would encourage anybody who is thinking about this in the future to definitely jump into it, because it has been an amazing experience. Win, lose, or draw, I will be very happy that I did it. I guess we can't really draw, but maybe David and I can both sit up here. Let's try that. It's a novel experience. Learned a lot. My wife and I primarily have been the ones that have been out knocking on doors and getting signatures. We needed 13 signatures to get on the ballot. We turned in excess of 13 pages of signatures. Gave us an opportunity to talk to a tremendous number of people early on in the process in the Third Ward. And then we followed that up with knocking on doors and talking to people and handing out campaign brochures and meeting more people. And that's been an amazing part of this. One of the things that I really like about being on planning and zoning is the public hearing process, because that's an opportunity for people to come before us in a little bit more of a low-key environment. It's not council, and we're hopefully a little bit less intimidating sometimes than council, and people can come and they can speak and they can ask us questions. We can ask them questions, and public input is so vital to the city governance process that I would encourage people to really get involved. I know you've heard that from a number of times. David and I met right after we both announced that we were going to run for this office, and one of the things we talked about was the fact that we were both going to run our own campaign and talk about the things that we bring. So you haven't heard me up to this point, and you will not hear me talk about David to any great extent. Those are the things that that David might not be able to do, or whatever the case may be. That's not the nature of this race. What I'm going to talk about, because that's, I'm not saying that quite the way I want it to. This isn't a traditional race where you tear down your opponent or anything like that. What I'm here to do is talk about my experiences, my background of serving on boards and commissions, serving on planning and zoning. The comprehensive plan that's coming forward is going to be of vital importance to the city going forward, and I think those are the strengths that I bring for the future. And as David said, I would certainly encourage you when you go in on November 7th to vote for you, and I would ask for your vote. Thank you.
I live in the Third Ward and will be voting for one of these candidates. And since I live in a secure apartment building, which means it is locked to prevent candidates or anyone else coming to my door unannounced, I wanted to hear a little bit more about their door-knocking experiences.
I am a Third Ward voter, and I wanted to ask you mostly about door-knocking, because this is one of the things that hasn't been covered, as far as I can tell, by other media sources. And what both of you have said, and all the candidates are saying, is how important that has been to them, what a great experience it is, and I know from past experience that this certainly is a way to connect to the voters and make yourself known. So what is that like? So what do you say when you come to the door and somebody answers? I'll start with you, Rob.
My general approach is I knock on the door, and when somebody answers, I hand them the brochure and start off by introducing myself, saying that I'm running for city council. There's some information in the brochure about where I stand on a few of the issues, plus my contact information is in there. I would encourage them to take a look at it and contact me if they have any questions, and also encourage them to go out and vote on November 7th. And then I also stop and ask if they have any questions at that point in time. One of the things that I've been hearing most about is traffic on Mortensen and traffic on Lincoln Way. A lot of people have questions and concerns about that.
Okay, well, we'll get back to maybe some of the other questions you might be getting. But, David, what do you say when people answer the door?
Oh, it's the same sort of thing. So I'll knock on the door, and when someone answers, I'll take the opportunity to introduce myself and explain that I'm running for city council. And I have a brochure that I'll give them. And then it's just you have to figure out whether the person is interested in having a short conversation, a long conversation, or something in between. And so I'll say a couple things about my campaign and you know, suggest that they look at the brochure, remind them that the election is coming up. Sometimes I'll tell them where the polling location is, because sometimes that changes as well. But then it just depends on how much time they have and what they seem to want to talk about.
Are you satisfied with the number of doors you were able to knock on and people you could reach? I'll start with David again this time.
I would say yes. It's been a fascinating experience. It's not something that I ever did before. But I've spent many days out now, generally on the weekends when people are likely to be around. And I'm surprised by how many dogs there are at home. There are a whole lot of dogs that answer the door for you. And sometimes people are home and other times people aren't home. I've been pretty happy with the number of people who are willing to come say hi, and the number of people are just happy that someone is showing an interest. And I think it's a great connection. And you know, even if they don't remember who I am, they remember that Ames is reaching out to them and wants them to pay attention to local affairs. I think that's a really good thing.
And so, Rob?
I would certainly agree with what David said. One of the things that I think was important for my wife and I, we did the majority of the door knocking for my campaign. We did have help from a couple of people in a couple of small areas, but we really wanted it to be a personal effort. So she and I did the vast bulk of our door knocking. And I think that was important for us to be able to have one-on-one contact with people, either she or I. And I think people really resonated with that. But it was also difficult sometimes to get people to do much more than just take the brochure and want to go back inside. There was also a point in time as we approached near the end of the election time period where both a sense from the people and also watching Ames people on Facebook, that there was starting to be a lot of negative feedback coming from door knocking, not so much just from political door knocking, but I also think there was some sales going on in the city and stuff like that, and there was starting to be some feedback that people were getting.
Oh, you mean commercial sales?
Yeah. People were getting fed up with door knocking a little bit. So I think sometimes people start to have a limit of how much they want to have that contact. So I think it is important to try and keep it short. And then, as David said, read from what they want on that first introduction when you talk to them.
Yeah, sometimes it's clear that it's just, I see you're kind of busy. Can I leave a brochure with you? Thanks a lot.
Yeah, because a lot of times you're there at dinner time.
Exactly. Yeah, that's when people are available. And I agree with that approach. And, you know, let's be clear. I think if you're doing a citywide race like the mayor or hospital board or whatever it is, it's really hard to do it yourself. There are a lot of doors in this town.
Absolutely.
But for a ward race like Ward 3, there, you know, that's at most a quarter of the residents in Ames. And so I've been doing the same thing. Every time that that my campaign has been out door knocking, I'm there door knocking. It's me and one other person, maybe across the street at best. And so I think that really is the right way to connect the candidate with the voter.
I think the difference in your occupations, why don't you just describe what your occupations are for the listeners? I'll go back to you, Rob.
I've been in public safety and law enforcement for 32 years now, going on 33 years. So I've been a career police officer.
But you also have experience as an ISU student, correct?
Yes, I graduated from ISU with both a master's degree and an undergraduate degree. So been in Ames since 1980.
And so, David?
I'm a sort of science-oriented technologist. And I went to Iowa State also, but then I went off to grad school at Boston University, where I got my PhD in computer science. So that's the field that I work in now. I run a software forensics firm, and we analyze software systems in order to describe them and explain them to a judge and jury in court.
Your connection to Ames is different because you have not in recent years been working in Ames. Is that correct?
I just moved back to Ames in 2013, so I've been working here since then.
But you grew up here.
Yes, that's true. So I didn't have to figure out myself to move to Ames like Rob did. You made a good choice. My parents did that for me, and so I got kind of lucky.
You must have found classmates. Did you run into classmates ever?
I do, but not as many as I sort of imagined I would when I was growing up. I don't know if this is particular to Ames or not, but a whole lot of Ames kids have moved away, and some have stayed too. But there are a lot that they don't live here anymore, and in a lot of cases, maybe their parents don't even live here anymore. It's been interesting to reconnect with those people through Facebook, right? Because before Facebook, there was kind of no way to find the people again. Maybe you'd get an alumni directory from your high school and see some addresses of towns you don't go to. So it's kind of neat to be able to see old people and find out, you know, where they've landed.
Yeah, and speaking of seeing old people, a lot of people knew your parents.
I think so, yes. My mom grew up in Ames, and my my parents met when my dad came here for grad school in the 60s.
What you have just said to me about your occupations seems to me that one of the important things about going out and meeting people is what win, lose, or draw, as you said, that we will be listening to you when you have something to say to us. And I mean, particularly in the city council, whatever happens, we would expect that if this is something that deals with areas that you're familiar with or things that you became aware of in door knocking, that you will be there for us. Hopefully we have as good feelings about both of you as you and demonstrate you have about each other. And that is one of the reasons I wanted to interview you. Is there anything else that you would like to let us know about the concerns besides traffic that more than three voters have?
So traffic was mentioned. I'll say also that I hear people mention some aspect of housing quite frequently. And so that's on people's mind. People have noticed a lot of apartment buildings, and they have thoughts about that. And people mention affordable housing. They mention the way that neighborhoods are changing in some areas. I think those are the things that sort of spontaneously come to the conversation. If I'm at a door talking to someone who, you know, it does more than just say thank you for the brochure, then that's the sort of thing that might come up.
The other thing I think we've both heard quite a bit probably, because I think we've both mentioned it at various times, is more retail and dining options out in the Third Ward.
Yeah.
That's something that I hear both door knocking and just in general I've heard for a number of years from people out in the Third Ward is they hope to see some of that develop.
Yeah, I hear that, and I say that too, because I totally agree that the West Ames would really benefit for some more options.
Well, I guess that there'll be a land use policy plan coming up that may address that. Thank you so much for coming in.
You're listening to KHOI. Right now we have a live guest, Mara McKay, and you want to talk about what's going on?
Sure.
Then we can talk about what we were talking about.
Absolutely. I'm invited to talk about our museums, and we have, as you remember, we have four museums. The Boone History Center, Kate Shelley Parker Museum, Hickory Grove Country School, and the Boone History Center, where we met. And one of our museums recently announced that we are closing for up to 2 years to evaluate all of the options for Mamie Dowd Eisenhower's birthplace. And what that means is that our board has determined that the numbers of people coming in have declined to the point where they need to look at the use of the facility to try to, number one, engage the public. Our mission is to bring people together, individuals and communities, talk about history and art. And we are trying to have a conversation, a dialogue about how best to do that with the Eisenhower connection. I don't know if you know the history, but Mamie was born in Boone and lived there for 9 months. And then her family moved to Cedar Rapids, and then they moved to Denver.
So it's like John Wayne's birthplace. I've been to that one, too, over there in
Winterset.
And, he was born in the house, and I went there, and it's like a shrine to John Wayne.
That's it.
And my dad's my dad, before he passed, bless his heart, that's all he would watch was John Wayne movies.
Too. Yeah, I know. My inheritance were videos of John Wayne.
There was a full-size a cardboard cutout of John Wayne in my father's living room.
Yeah.
But yeah, I guess Mamie Eisenhower doesn't bring out the same in people. She's not the connected person in history for a lot of people to have a cardboard cutout of Mamie Eisenhower.
We do have a cardboard cutout.
No, but people that collect it in their house.
In their homes? You're probably right about that. There isn't the same cinematography connection with Mamie. However, there are a lot of fans. There are people that love Mamie. And I personally think that the Eisenhower history is dynamic and fascinating. And they're a unique couple that had a powerful influence on our history in America. She made, for one thing, 500 million kitchens and bathrooms pink.
Oh, really? She brought that pink?
She was that person. That was her, Mamie Pink, in the 50s. So she transformed us like that. And then people have asked, well, what was her legacy? Well, she wanted to be remembered as everyone's best friend.
Mm-hmm.
And she was very personal, but also just the stand behind her man kind of.
Yeah, that was
50s
woman. That was at post-World War II PTSD, before it was PTSD.
Right.
And then you prop up the family.
You
make it happen.
You do. And she, throughout the war, was a strong personality there. And I think that, that's all of that history is important for us to preserve and remember how we do it, where we do it. We have a couple of different issues at the birthplace. We have a lot of preservation expense on that site. And when you have a historical facility, especially a historic home, you have to make it sustainable. You have to be able to cover the indirect costs and the direct costs of running. And on top of it, you have to be able to cover all the costs that you need to pay to preserve.
So there's not a lot of
all of it.
There's not a lot of people coming together, I guess, to show up to the birthplace house.
This year we had 850, right around that number.
Uh-huh.
And I kind of joke, if every season I could start by closing the facilities, maybe then that would bring the numbers up because.
Wow. I hear you.
And that is kind of how, it's an awkward thing to say, but until you start to make some of those tough decisions to try to, put it forward, people don't always remember or they don't think of it. And
yeah, that's true.
We have a lot of challenges that way, but you know, we're hoping to figure it out. We're hoping to work through these things.
It's important to kind of take care of the history of a place and Mamie's Central Iowa's history.
Mm-hmm. And she is, and we have, you know, really wanted to find unique ways to bring people together, younger generations, and how we can do that. We've also talked about the use of the facility and going forward how to make it sustainable. So one of the ideas, and it's one of several ideas, is to have a vacation rental, for instance. So maybe make some minor adjustments so that people could come in and stay at the home and engage with the history that way.
You mean like an Airbnb kind of thing?
That's kind of how we were thinking of it, where you would be able to take some of the pieces, do some replicas, talk about the history in the home, so that part of the year you could actually have tours, but then much of the time you would actually allow people to come in and stay. And that might be one way that we could do some revenue generating that we haven't been able to do in the past. We have a facility that's two blocks away where we've been considering putting Boone's First Family, a gallery there. So we have a large Masonic temple right across from the Dutch Oven Bakery, and that's one of the ideas, is to pull the collection, or most of the collection at least, over to that facility and then possibly have something that would be complimentary that people could go to and stay. Might be a new way to reach people. Birthplace homes across the country
That would actually be interesting.
Yeah, you know, it might be a great way. Ginger Rogers, for instance, another great personality from that era, John Steinbeck, Frank Lloyd Wright, Dick Clark, Mickey Rooney, those are names that have vacation rentals.
And oh, wow.
So it is surprising.
Wow.
But they do. So well,
I know
maybe that would be a way.
The Frank Lloyd Wright, there's a place in California you can, you know.
Yeah, stay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, wow.
And in California, John Steinbeck's home, very cute, quaint cottage that you can rent and stay. Like I said, Ginger Rogers, her two-bedroom home doesn't look like Mamie's, but it's small, very small home like that.
It was the 40s and 50s, the modest homes.
Yeah, modest homes. And so, you know, people might like to consider that thought. We haven't put anything officially together around that idea, but it is one thought that we're tossing around. It's a conversation about how we engage around this history and how we preserve it, how we tell the story of Mamie Eisenhower and her connections to Boone. So how we develop this is yet to be determined, but it's a conversation over 2 years that we hope to have slowly. We know that a lot of people have voiced their opinions in Boone, and we hope that people in Ames will engage in the conversation, Central Iowa. And we've had calls around the country, people that have been interested in learning more about the birthplace and its challenges, and also, you know, hoping to figure out a new path for the future and helping us to make a way through this.
Well, I appreciate your time, and I hope everything works out.
The presidential year will soon be drawing near. The people soon will choose their favorite son.
I wonder what they'll do in 1952.
I wonder who they'll send to Washington.
Pardon me, but they like Ike, and Ike is good on a mic. They like Ike,
but Ike says he don't wanna.
That makes Ike the kind of fella they like. And what's more, they seem to think he's gonna.
But Harry won't get out. They're in for plenty of fights. Harry won't get out. He's got squatter's rights.
But there's Ike, and Ike is good on a mic. And they know the votes that he can carry.
But don't forget there's Harry.
But they like Ike.
For nearly 20 years, we've had the people's cheers. The Democrats continue to advance.
like Ike, and Ike is good on a mic. They like Ike.
But Ike says he's not bidding.
Well, that makes Ike the kind of fella they like. And what's more, they seem to think he's kidding.
But Harry won't consent. He'll get a sock in the jaw.
Republican president?
That's against the law.
If it's Ike, your chief can go on a hike. And we boys will see he doesn't tarry.
They can't do that to Harry.
But they like Ike.
You're listening to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio. That was a song, I Like Ike. Susan Franzen picked that out because of the context of the Mamie Dodd Eisenhower birthplace in Boone is closing, and, you know, hope we can do something about it. But up next, we have Susan Guiazda, and hello, Susan.
Hi, good morning.
So glad to have you on. What's up in Ames?
Well, it's always great to be here. November, again, is shaping up to be a very busy month. We're kind of kicking off the holiday season. Winter, we've noticed a little bit of change in the weather.
A little bit.
Yeah, a little bit cooler. We had a great Halloween and trick-or-treating, and I would assume that there are people wondering what to do with their old jack-o'-lanterns. You see a lot of those pumpkins and harvest vegetables, those gourds, squash, those kinds of things that people put out for decor. Right about now or in the next week, they tend to get a little mushy, and we are asking people not to throw those in the trash. So I know a lot of people don't compost, but may be looking for a compost opportunity. And so what we're asking people to do with those pumpkins is to take them to the resource recovery plant on Center Avenue. It's kind of the corner of East Lincoln Way and Center. And on the north side of that building will be a large bin where they can put their fall harvest vegetables. I have one disclaimer. We will not be accepting the colored corn that people use as decor. That can just go in the garbage. We are taking those soft, mushy vegetables.
So is that going to go to the resource recovery plant to be composted?
Well, so a little background on the resource recovery plant. As you know, all the trash in Story County is deposited at the resource recovery plant where it's processed. And what happens is that high moisture content product is not good fuel. It's not very combustible.
You mean you throw a dirty wet log on a fire and see what happens?
Yeah. It's not combustible. It does not have high BTU value. And so we're diverting it. So we're doing a pumpkin diversion. And so that's why we're trying to get those pumpkins. I have seven of them right now on my front porch.
They're kind of looking a little sad.
Yeah. And if you think about every household in Ames having one or two, it's a lot of pounds of compostable material. So we're looking for a home for that material. Right now we're diverting it. So last year we fed it to goats.
As long as it's not black mold kind of stuff going on the outside and they're still edible, there's some animals that could use it.
Right. And I think by the time we get a lot of them, they're maybe past the point of being healthy for.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So we're diverting them, and that's we're calling it the Pumpkin Diversion Program, the north side of the resource recovery plant. Drop your pumpkins off. They will only be there until Friday, November 10th. By that point, we think most pumpkins have kind of outlived their useful life and probably need to be off the porch step at that point.
Oh, yeah.
So just remember, until Friday, November 10th, that pumpkin bin will be there at the north side of the resource recovery plant, 110 Center Avenue. So
excellent. Thank you.
Something. As long as we're talking dates, just a reminder that November, there are two different holiday closings for the City of Ames, which means most departments and divisions will be closed. Of course, your 24/7 service departments like the fire department and police department will never shut down. But things like City Hall will be closed on Friday, November 10th. That is Veterans Day. A little plus, you don't have to feed your parking meter on that day.
Oh.
Yeah, this is always confusing for people because Veterans Day, local government is closed, but Martin Luther King Day, we are open. And so that day you do need to feed your parking meter. But next Friday, November 10th, little break, City Hall will be closed and the meters will not be enforced. So also closings in November include Thursday, November 23rd and Friday, November 24th for Thanksgiving.
Well, that's a given.
Well, sometimes the Friday confuses people, so we need to make sure people are aware of that. So those are our November closings. Speaking of closings, for those people who travel on South Duff, this is a big closing. We've had kind of an emergency sewer repair right in front of the Chick-fil-A.
So that's a high traffic area.
South 3rd and South Duff, we will be closing the northbound lanes. So you will be detoured at South 3rd west to Grand Avenue. Southbound traffic will continue as usual.
So try to avoid that all together. Go almost around. I would go around to the highway.
Absolutely. To go around that. If you have another option, stay off of South Duff. That will be on Monday, November 6th. Northbound traffic on South Duff right at the Chick-fil-A is going to be detoured. So if you have somewhere you need to get to north in Ames, think of a different route. You'll want to stay off of South Duff. There is a failing storm sewer. There's some erosion under the street. So
that's going to be a big task.
Well, we're getting it now. See, the key is to get it now. We're hoping to get the repairs in 1 or 2 days. Mm-hmm. So certainly we're hoping to open back up Wednesday, Thursday in that time frame, maybe a little earlier. But if you can catch these things before they develop into sinkholes and problems, you can delay or avoid a huge reconstruction in the future. So we noticed some deterioration, investigated a little bit more, saw some undermining under the street. You never want that. It will involve ripping up some of the street, and that's why we need the two north lanes, because you got to get equipment in there, and you've got to make sure that your crews are safe. People are not always the best at slowing down. You want to make sure that there's enough room to maneuver.
Well, and also get it before Thanksgiving, because that's when the big high traffic goes on for the sales
sure.
and for the Christmas
yes,
holidays.
So absolutely.
You guys are ahead of the game.
Yeah. We
Good
want
job.
To jump
Good
in
job.
There. We know this is inconvenient. We know South Duff is very difficult. There's been a lot of construction in that area.
Uh-huh.
So we appreciate people's patience and maybe rerouting themselves and detouring around other parts of the city just for that early part of the week next week. Just remember, before you get on to South Duff, detour before you get to South 3rd, and you should be fine. We wanted to congratulate our new city attorney, Mark Lambert. So
Yay.
We had an announcement, a special city council meeting this week, where our interim city attorney, Mark Lambert, was officially appointed as city attorney. He's been with us for quite a few years. The city attorney is one of two positions that are actually appointed by the city council. They go through an HR process, but these are the only two employees that are actually going before the council, voted on and hired, and report directly to the Ames City Council.
Do citizens get a chance to have any influence
yes.
on that vote?
So when Mark was going through the hiring process, there was a public presentation where he spoke about his vision for the department. People asked questions. We took all of that input into consideration, presented it to the city council, and then they did vote. It was a unanimous vote. We're happy to welcome Mark aboard, and that department is not completely full staffed, but they are staying awfully busy, and we're glad that Mark's on board to lead them.
Excellent. Excellent.
Yeah. I came on the show, I think, last month with our electric services director, Donald Kamm, and we talked about our community solar project called SunSmart Ames.
Yes, I remember that.
Yeah, and we were trying to really promote the residential sale of those power packs or your residential community solar project buy-in, and we're trying to wrap those up by the end of October. We have extended that deadline to purchase an individual power pack or a couple for your home to the end of the year. We have a lot more information about power packs and the SunSmart Ames community solar project on our website, cityofames.org/solar.
So this is a Ames long-term investment in a green community.
Absolutely. And we see it as the beginning of maybe perhaps more investments to come, you know, that this might be the start of more sustainable power projects.
So after 20 years, what happens?
Well, after 20 years, your investment basically expires. We have a contract to purchase the solar power for 20 years. Again, the city won't own the solar panels. We will be purchasing the power from the solar panels. As a private entity, Private companies can take advantage of federal tax credits that the city couldn't take advantage of. So we lock in a rate and a purchase of power agreement with a solar farm, and they own the panels and operate the facility. We purchase the power from them.
So when did you guys, when did the city decide to invest in a in this kind of a solar project? I mean, this is long-term planning for the city.
Yeah, and this has been a grassroots effort. I have to say that there was a lot of community interest in investing in solar, and those people that were having this concept of, hey, other communities are doing it, what would it take to get it here, went to the electric department, went to the council, went to the there's an advisory group called UREB, the Electric Utilities Advisory Board, and kept pushing and pushing and saying, let's make this happen. And I think there was a lot of sense that, yes, this should happen, but it the council said, yes, we need to go forward with this, but we're not going to subsidize this. It needs to be customer paid for. So those customers that want that kind of choice need to be the ones that are funding it. And that's why we need to get to sell the power packs.
So this is an important step forward then.
Yeah. And we've had a lot of support. I have to say, those people who stepped up and said we want this in our community are signing up. Absolutely. We need to get it out to a broader audience. I think there's a lot of interest. Sometimes it's really hard to get people from, you have the information, okay, now make the decision, fill out the form.
Yeah,
it's the action point. I'm
trying not to promote this, but at the same time, you know, bring awareness. This would be an alternative holiday gift to give to somebody.
That's
an excellent
idea.
The person that has everything, this would be an alternative gift to give.
I never even thought about that. That is brilliant.
Okay,
you're
welcome.
We're going to have to sell that.
Yeah,
as the holiday gift for somebody who has everything.
Yeah,
so
because there's a lot of people in this community that don't really need anything.
Those people who are so difficult to shop for, but have a concern for the environment, and want to be part of something bigger, something that reduces their carbon footprint.
Make an impact.
I'm on board. I love it.
Okay, you're welcome.
Okay, so hey. It is this coming Saturday, which is November 4th. It is one of our second Yard Waste Free Days. Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. That time of the year is rolling around.
Yes. We have 4 Yard Waste Free Days every fall. These are extraordinarily popular days with our residents. We know that they are looking for this opportunity to get rid of that yard waste they've collected.
I mean, all the leaves from the oak trees and the oh, my gosh.
So it's been interesting to watch kind of the evolution of these days. When I first joined the city more than a decade ago, we had these in September and October, and people said, my leaves aren't even down yet. Also, we work around the home football games to make sure there's no conflicts with home football games. And actually, our yard waste-free site has moved around a little bit. We are back east again on Friel Drive. The site is at 400 Friel Drive, and you need to access it from Southeast 5th via South Dayton. That way you enter one direction and you exit onto Lincoln Way. Otherwise, we get some kind of backup sometimes on Lincoln Way, and we don't want that. So go around to South Dayton, come in on Southeast 5th Street, and enter the Yard Waste site on Friel.
Okay.
There are 4 dates. We've missed one. We're done with the October 21st one is over, but now we have November 4th, which is this Saturday. So get your yard waste ready. We also have Saturday, November 18th, which is the brush day. So that's always extremely popular. And then we'll finish up all the way in December. Saturday, December 2nd will be the last yard waste free day. And those hours are from 8 a.m. to 4 p.m. So mark your calendars. Get your bags together and drop them off. It really is something that people will kind of work their yard, work around so they can get those bags out there. And I know it's still early. You still have 3 left, but you really just don't want to miss them. I would say take advantage. I can't tell you how many times I thought, oh, I'll just hit the next one and it's rainy or
snow has happened.
Snow.
And then ice. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So you want to get out there and get those get that yard waste dropped off. Very popular. And people ask me, when's the best time to go? You know, I couldn't tell you. I know right when it opens that there tends to be a lot of people who want to get out there right at the, you know, 8 o'clock. And I think maybe lunch hour might be a nice time to try to try it. And I have heard if you wait till later in the afternoon, like after 3, it tends to drop off. But I can't – it's – you know, some people tell me they get right in and get out, and other times mm-hmm. there's a bit of a line, and that can happen. Just be patient. Take your time and get in there and get your stuff dropped off. So I know some people want to take several trips, and that's fine.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. If you have established older trees that like to drop buckets and buckets of leaves, yeah.
Yeah.
Do you have anything else to share with us?
Well, I do want to just remind people that the library has its book sale. It is going on.
I love book sales.
Yeah, it actually started on Thursday, November 2nd. So that was a day with admission, unless you're a member of the Friends of the Library. Today is Friday, November 3rd. It is free admission, 9 a.m. to 6 p.m. today, Saturday, November 4th. You could both go to Yard Waste Free Day and to the library book sale.
Oh, wild times here, Ames. Wild times.
Yep. And then it wraps up on Sunday, November 5th, with admission was $1, and everything left is free.
Oh, you know, yeah, that actually turns out to be really good for people who love books.
Yeah, the library, just to let people know, does have a little bit different holiday hours. They are closed on Thanksgiving and the day after, but they are open on Veterans Day. So it can get a little confusing. City Hall closed on Veterans Day. Library will be open.
Do you have anything else coming up with the city that you'd like to share?
One other thing is just SciRide is having a public input meeting on Thursday, November 16th. And that is, again, this 2018 is going to be a big year for SciRide. There are several future changes to the schedule, and they have done a lot of work to get input and feedback on schedule changes. This is kind of the last one of those last final, let's collect some input. Here are the suggested schedule changes. Let us know your thoughts, how this might affect you. And so 5:30 to 7 p.m. on Thursday, November 17th at the SciRide building will be another opportunity to gather input on these future service changes and get information and give feedback.
Excellent. So, excellent.
Yeah, and that is pretty much it. Lots happening.
Lots happening in Ames, and take advantage of all the special opportunities here in Ames. Thank you, Susan. I appreciate your time.
Sure.
And all that you do for the city of Ames. Since we're out of time, we're going to be playing backtracking. And I'm going to have my fabulous intern read today's show.
Well, today's show was engineered by Cynthia, and I was shadowing her today. Our theme song, as always, is Backtrackin' by Tom Richards and Al Harris from their CD, The Ballad of Kate Shelley.
And I like Ike.
Oh, yeah.
Decca Records Press, brought to us by Susan Frenzen.
And then Local Talk is a radio production workshop as well as a show. So if you would like to try your hand at reporting, we'll train you. Come and join the Local Talk team. Let us know what you think. You can call us at 515-292-2878. Email us at khoiradio@gmail.com or go to the contact page of our website at khoifm.org. Remember, you, the listener, are what makes KHOI meaningful and possible. Thank you for listening, and we'll see you again on the radio.